Hey, you wanna get high, man?
All right.
We're the Party Brigade.
All right, my friend.
We're here to play some drinking games.
We're going to see what happens. I usually just press record and we just start having a conversation. So, but I do got to say this. Most of the time I get a podcast started and the person I'm interviewing or talking to or hanging out with, I've known for years. And so it's very easy. We're usually in a conversation about some shit, you know, whatever, some inside talk or something. But in this case, I don't know who the fuck you are. And this is the first time I met you, so I've known you for less than 10 minutes, and some of that wasn't even talking. So this is a very interesting podcast. I'm really excited to do it. It's so fucking random. Did not plan on doing a podcast tonight. Hadn't had a podcast in a couple weeks with all the virus stuff going on, all the shutdowns going on. It's kind of thrown a kink in everybody's shit and as far as travel and setting up things. But tonight is a random ass night. My wife hit me up and said, friend's coming over, had another friend coming over, but curious about doing a podcast. And I threw everything together and we're recording. So what's up, man? So tell us who you are. What's your fucking name even?
I don't even know who you are. Who are you?
Right. My name's Josh. I'm Smitty. This is Getting Shitty with Smitty podcast. Podcast created for just hanging out and having conversations.
All right. Well,
and
very happy to be here with you, Josh.
I'm excited to have you here, man. So tell us who you are.
I'm Casey Wells.
Okay, Casey Wells. Yep. And
I'm an artist from Illinois.
Okay, right on. Yeah. Like what kind of art?
Well, throughout my life, I've made about every form of art you could think of.
Tell me about it.
I went to school at Illinois State University. I got a bachelor's in fine art and a master's in arts technology. My bachelor's, I had a focus on painting, but I never really did much painting. I was more interested in installation art, and I got into creating like haunted house kind of environments that were geared toward attempting to send the viewer into a transcendent kind of experience.
Uh-huh.
I worked in a gallery for 5 years while I went to school at Illinois State. And I learned that when people move through a gallery and look at a painting, they only spend 3 to 5 seconds with it. But my work at that time was about transcendence and about escapism, because I was coming from a traumatic time in my life where I dealt with some death of a couple siblings that had passed away. And so I got into art as a means of coping with all of that.
Right.
And it was a form of transcendence personally for me, so I wanted to also share that experience with my viewer. And I knew if they were to engage with a painting on a wall for 3 to 5 seconds, there's no way they were going to be able to access a transcendent kind of moment.
Okay.
So I decided I had to encapsulate them into the environment and completely surround them in the environment. So I started creating these installations that...
So what do you mean by installation? I'm not familiar with that. Like, what do you mean by installation art?
Installation art is art designed for a specific space with just that space in mind. And so you use the entire space. And so I was also researching like Egyptian architecture and learning about these corridors that were created before you would move through, before you would enter or see the pyramid, the funerary complex, I think they were called. And those spaces were always very dimly lit. So all of my spaces, I would move you down these hallways for sometimes up to 150 feet. The last one I did, you had to crawl through a tunnel for about 150 feet in different directions and stuff.
So who would you do this for? Like what
they
would
they
were do?
Gallery exhibitions.
So you would, I mean, this sounds like a big production.
Yeah, they were.
So like who would contract you out for shit like this though?
I was all on my dime. I got into a lot of student debt, student loans.
God,
you know,
I bet.
You know, the last one I did cost about $50,000. And I still am dealing with that debt.
Jesus.
And so I decided it was time to quit installations after I left Illinois State until I could have them in a more permanent environment and because it always kind of broke my heart to put these things together. The last one I did took like a month to build. It was it was up for 3 months.
Well, what happens after, like, because I mean, it can't be a permanent. Yeah, it can't be a permanent thing, right?
We have to tear it back down. Yeah, it was heartbreaking to do that,
dude.
So I decided I'm not
ridiculous.
I'm not making installations
anymore.
What
kind of mental space do you have to be in to put that much effort in? So how much time would one art piece take? Like, let's just say,
for example, the last one I did, it was a year in planning.
Jeez.
For the videos that were within it, the design and all that. We tried to get as much of the materials beforehand already pre-built. So,
so you had a crew or
I was the primary guy with it, but I had two other people that other artists that helped me do their own touch on it as well. We all had our own
contributions.
But I did have other friends that contributed to, but they weren't creative contributors.
Right.
They just helped with getting it done.
So you said the idea was a year. What was the actual...
The installation itself, it was called the Sunshine Underground. We got that name from a Chemical Brothers song.
Right on.
And that song was featured in the installation too after you crawled through that 150 foot of
Is there footage that you have online?
Yeah. Yeah, you can see the video if you go on to YouTube
and
type in Chemical Brothers, the Sunshine Underground.
It'll be one of the first videos.
It's like the fourth or fifth, there's a couple of gears in it as the screenshot of it.
Okay.
And so it's the video, everything in that video. I watched like 50 different documentaries on the universe, and I was obsessed with this, the micro, macro, fractal geometry, the similarities between the smallest things in life and the largest, like the way a cell, when it divides, looks like, and when a supernova explodes, like these visual similarities that exist from the micro to the macro. So I put together a video that went along with the Sunshine Underground that had a cadence, like every cut in that video was cut to the beat of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's maybe we can watch it after this.
This sounds like so much effort and time. That's what's like blowing my mind. It's like a love project that for something to last that long. I'm trying to find the drive behind it.
I worked in the gallery too, and luckily I had keys to it, so the gallery directors allowed me to live in the space. I actually lived there for a month and a week. I only went home 4 times during that time.
That's wild.
There was one point in time I worked for 56 hours straight on it.
So what's the drive?
Nonstop.
What's the drive behind it? Like what kept you going in it? Or is that just how your mind works?
Well, one thing was just the timeline. I had a month to set it up. And so there was an opening that was already a deadline, you know. So the work had to get done before the opening happened.
So you sold it before you put it together.
I pitched it to the director.
You had to make it happen.
Yeah, and when I pitched it
to like a book deal or some shit like that. Like I have to put it out there.
Yeah, and when I pitched it to the director, I had it all on paper first because I thought we had experiences prior, and I thought just drawings would be enough for him, but he ripped me apart for not being able to understand my drawings. So I taught myself AutoCAD in one weekend.
Okay.
And came back with him, and I recreated his entire gallery in AutoCAD to like the inch. I designed my video. I showed him a fly through where you could fly virtually through the entire exhibition and exit it. And I set that on his table, and then he was like, "Oh, okay, I get it now." And I was like, "All right." But it was.
Did you sleep any of that weekend?
Very little. Yeah, that was the time where I was. Adderall was of assistance.
Oh, I hear. Yeah, there you go, man. That's what I was talking about, the limitless thing earlier. Yeah, it sounds like it's one of those.
There was times at Illinois State. Yeah, I remember one week I only got like 2 hours of sleep.
I bet. So this is why you were in college?
When you were doing this? Yeah, I was getting my master's.
Okay, so this was,
during that Sunshine Underground project.
Okay.
That was 2008.
So you had a little bit more time than, say, a family man would or whatever, but.
For sure. This is my life. That was
all
it was.
A lot of space in there.
All of everything I had was put into that project.
Wow.
I was down to 165 too. I lost a lot of weight. I weigh 210 now, but I was just skin and bones by the end of that. It took a lot out of me. But
so what happened after the fact? So you did the project. How did it go through? How was it received?
Great. Yeah.
Was it?
This is great. If you watch that video.
And how long did you say it existed? How long did you say it was set up?
It was up for 3 months.
Okay.
The summer of 2008. And the arts technology department, that's where I got my master's, and they offered me a job as an instructor after that. And so that whole project kind of...
So it bloomed into something that was actually, turn into something that was worthwhile.
Like ended up teaching at Illinois State for a year.
Hell yeah. So after that, after taking on this big ass project like that, what did you have? Was there another thing?
Yeah, there was, we did another one, a big one. Whenever I taught at ISU, I had this other class that I had 11 students that I worked with to do one project for the whole semester. And then we had it at the Center of Visual Arts or Performing Arts at Illinois State. And it was called Dave's PC. And that we had built a laser harp.
It was called Dave's PC.
Yeah.
So what does that stand for? Yeah, politically correct? Yeah, Dave's politically correctness? It was
like Digital Audio Visual Electronic Performance Council.
Jesus Christ,
and
man.
So it was a laser harp. It was up on this hourglass thing. It was like 20 foot tall, but in the center of it, it was all MIDI. And so the kids, we had four kids that were amazing musicians.
Yeah.
And there was a MIDI drum set in there, MIDI keyboard, MIDI guitar, MIDI wind instrument.
Uh-huh.
So it's all digital equipment. And there was lasers in it too. You could put your hand out to... And you break the laser and make a sound.
Right, sounds, yeah.
You
know,
one laser that was a red distance.
Okay.
So as you went your hand up and down, it would change the pitch whatever sound and so on. We could program it all to do that. And then I was up in the booth, and I had a VJ machine, like cutting videos. And I used the videos from the Sunshine Underground thing I did the year prior.
Mm-hmm.
And I was cutting videos to the beat of the kids doing their music. On these big screens that was projected on the laser harp and the hourglass shape that we had on there. And then there was two side ones.
So how many people involved would you say?
11 of us on that project.
Okay. And that also had really great response?
Yeah. Yeah. Sweet. They were like, oh my God, he did it again. You know,
So where do you go from there? Like, how do you take that?
Then I kind of decided it was time for me to leave Illinois State. Because through undergrad, grad, and teaching, I was there for like 7 years.
So what's your highest degree you have?
Master's in Arts Technology.
Nice, okay.
And then I decided it was time. I was blessed with a mother that allowed me to stay with her for all those years too.
Okay.
And so I didn't have a mortgage hanging over my head.
Yeah, man.
You know, I split bills with her, but I didn't have to worry about paying rent.
So what was your focus? Like what was your... Art.
Well, when I got out
you aiming towards?
When I left Illinois State University, it was all about origins of power. And I started seeking origins of power atomically. I was on a quest to understand God and God.
Like in human nature or in...
Yeah. No, well, yes. There was two...
In humanity.
Two paths. Okay. One was towards scientifically, atomically understanding God's work, origins of power.
Okay.
How did this all begin, the whole universe and all that.
Okay.
The other was down this other path of economically and politically origins of power, like money.
Right.
Where does that all come from?
The root of all evil. Yeah.
Who is behind that?
Yeah.
And who are the funding sources of the biggest organizations in the world? And I was looking at that time, like the Federal Reserve System, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the United Nations, the Council on Foreign Relations, the World Health Organization, and so on, Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg Group, all those guys.
And I've heard of pretty much all of those. How did art take you to there?
Well, I wanted to use my art to... let me back up 1 second. At Illinois State, there was... What's great about that in a liberal arts college, you learn, they push you to learn about every form of art, you know?
Sure.
And so one of my other things I learned was graphic design. I had a knack for that as well. And so I wanted to use my graphic design skills because I didn't have much money at the time because I had all that student debt.
Yeah, but you put a lot of time into designing some really...
But I had a computer and I had like the programs to do graphic design, and graphic design doesn't cost you anything.
Okay.
And so... I decided it was time to make data visualizations to help crack codes and help people better understand, make it more simple for people to understand these origins and power things that I was seeking out. But in that effort, there was one name that kept popping up in relation to the funding sources of all those organizations I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And that name was Rockefeller.
Well, yeah, I've heard that name plenty of times.
What got you?
Because like we jumped from art straight into that. What got you to even begin to seek out or?
I just wanted to know how things work. I wanted to know who is behind it all. I wanted to understand the universe. I wanted to understand this world, why things are the way they are.
So just as an art, yeah, okay. So as an artist, look at things. You want to tear everything apart and see.
Yeah.
See
do an honest investigation. Right. For myself, you know, just turn off the TV. And I spent a lot of time out in a studio. It was like an old garage turned into a studio for me. I locked the door and, you know, just sat out there quietly with myself for years.
Meditating.
It's kind of like your space here. I have the walls, the ceiling, every square inch of that space. And it's probably like four of these put together or five. Size-wise, just covered, plastered, you know, like Sistine Chapel, just everything with my thoughts and ideas out. And that space really helped me get all these things out. And then I would then go inside and make really clean graphic designs of the information I was gathering through those investigations.
So exploring. So you went the, all right, so you went the one way that we talked about with the economic and all the other bullshit, but the other side that you were talking about that you explored, what did you find there?
Well,
the spiritual side, the search for
God. Yeah. Questions I was writing on the wall there were, you know, how did it begin? You know, how did the Big Bang happen? Where did it, how will it end? You know, and I was looking at quantum mechanics and quantum physics and observing that in all particles and all matter, everything is tethered together by positive, negative, and neutral charges.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in an atom,
sure,
protons are positively charged. They're attracted and stuck to neutrons. They make up the nucleus together. Electrons rotate around that. And it seemed to me that everything was attracted to or tethered to neutral. And so I asked myself the question, of those three charges, which came first? Since everything was attracted to neutral, to me, the answer was neutral. Neutral must have came first.
Okay.
So in the beginning, the first act of God for me was the creation of something from nothing. Because in my mind, in the beginning, there was an infinite void of nothingness, similar to Genesis. Just infinite sea of darkness. And then matter came into existence from nothing to something, from zero to one. That's impossible. How can we go from no physical matter to physical matter? To me, that can only be described as an act of God. And in my story of Tidbit, is what I call it, God is the inexplicable force that made the impossible possible. And so the first act of God was to introduce one neutral particle into the infinite. And then my mind said the reaction to that would be an instantaneous amount of infinite particles in all directions. Like by putting one neutral particle into the infinite, it makes the infinite infinitely neutral. And so infinite neutrality is a term I came up with to describe that space, the infinite space of neutral particles. But you could also call that the introduction of all dark matter. Dark matter is just matter that doesn't have a polarity, doesn't have a positive negative about it. It's just neutral.
Okay.
No charge. So you can't see it. Because it has no polarity.
Well, I can't see any charges, honestly.
I guess I'm taking it on faith that those charges even exist
based on what other scientists. Just science,
You know, and so, then this, if that were true, those no two of those particles should have ever touched.
Okay.
Because they're neutral. They have no charge about them. They should have remained there in a static state, perpetually parallel for all of eternity.
So pretty much everybody doesn't understand half that shit, and I love it. But this is my question, though. This is my question about that and your search for and your understanding of what you have come to take in and believe and understand as any of that. what does that do to your daily life?
Sure.
You know, like how does that make you react to the world? Like that's what I feel is like the most important part.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like how does understanding everything that you understand make you react to the world?
Well, at this time I'm running for president in 2020.
Okay, so here, boom, motherfuckers. We got a presidential candidate sitting in the fucking room with getting shitty with Smitty here. He probably just lost some fucking points, but that's all right. So I wasn't going to say shit, but yeah. All right, so go ahead, keep on.
Okay. So how I relate my spiritual findings to politics is that it's all about balance. You know, there's internal balance and external balance. And I feel like I have my internal balance pretty well square at this point.
Okay.
And so now I'm looking into the world and observing external imbalances. I see great imbalances between this growing gap between the rich and the poor.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there needs to be actions put toward that until that's brought back to a level that resembles this idea of equality.
Okay.
You know, we're never going to be perfectly balanced, but until we get closer to it, there should be actions to strive towards that.
So you just threw that shit out there like, I'm a fucking presidential candidate. You know, that's just not a normal fucking thing to come out with. At what point did this process begin in your brain to say, fuck it, I'm going?
For president?
But, duh. Well, it's kind of crazy. To the average person, it's kind of fucking crazy.
Well, I researched that stuff about the Rockefellers and whatnot for about 8 to 10 years. And I went through some depression dealing with all of that of like, oh my goodness, I can't believe everything I've been taught in school is...
Right. It's bullshit. Yeah. And what can I do about it?
Yeah, yeah. And eventually I was sitting in my kitchen and, you know, in 2018 thinking, you know, the only thing I'm ever going to be able to do to have any authority to potentially do something about all this is run for president. First.
So you didn't go for fucking local anything like a mayor or like, well, you know, congressman.
I can tell you, I filled out.
You went from zero to fucking 100.
Between 2010 and 2013, I filled out so many FOIA requests with my city government that they couldn't stand me. I got a stack of 2 notebooks that are about 8 inches thick, both of them, going through all my mayor's emails and so on, figuring out this thing called economic development.
Okay.
From 2011 through 2013, he became a member of the local economic development council. I went down to the local economic development council and I interviewed their CEO. I asked him, where do you take your stomping orders? He tells me, we take our prescription from the International Economic Development Council. I start researching them and find that the Rockefeller Brothers Fund funds some of their initiatives. I also found in the International Economic Development Council has over 4,500 economic development councils that fall under their umbrella. So they're in control of 4,500 economic development councils in this country. The Rockefeller Brothers Fund influences how they operate. I also found in the IEDC board member handbook that it states that this organization will determine who wins and loses in the international marketplace. It also says in there that any member of this council has a duty of loyalty, duty of care to this organization over any other in their personal or professional life. And so if you have a mayor or anybody that's a part of an economic development council, they have a duty of loyalty to ensure that the profits of those corporations invested in that economic development council grow. And so I went through our annual treasurer's reports for our city and found that during that time my mayor was affiliated with that organization, that every year, incrementally, year by year, our annual city spending gradually increased year by year. More and more of our city spending was going to corporations that were invested in that local economic development council.
Okay.
And so if these councils are set up by these internationalists and they already have stated that this organization will determine who wins and loses in the international marketplace.
Yeah, play ball.
And the city council is basically stealing our real estate tax dollars to fund these redevelopment projects that help funnel the money back in there. That is what can I do? You know, like running for mayor, sure, maybe I'll be able to push back at that on my own town, but every other community in my state is going to be dealing with this shit. Uh-huh. Every other community probably in this country has this shit being imposed on them.
All right.
And so what is running for mayor going to do for, you know, the whole? Not much.
You went for the big game.
Because that's the only place you can do it. It's all handed down from on high. And until we disrupt it at the top and make these economic development councils work for the American people and give the American people the opportunity to give their input on how their real estate tax dollars are spent, you know, we're going to be held hostage by all this nonsense of corruption.
So what do you think is the first steps to even beginning to bring this information out to people and to begin a change in the process?
Right.
What's even the first step? Like what
write
can we do?
Casey Wells in 2020, write my name on the ballot.
All right.
Let me be president. And I promise you, I am going to remove every public official that's a part of a private council from those positions.
What do you think that's goes? What do you think goes on? What do you think goes on as far as keeping people where they're at? Like I'm curious. I'm not very astute. Most people are not as far as how it goes. They have Facebook opinions, and I think a lot of people really have like maybe a 2% knowledge of what the hell goes on in government reality. I think everybody has armchair perspectives of how things should be done. But I'm just curious, like, what can be done? Like, what's the first steps to getting shit actually changed to where people are winning again, where people can survive? Like, I mean, how could a family of four survive off one paycheck, 60 years ago, and now you're struggling with two paychecks? I mean, what's going on?
Money isn't real. Money isn't backed by gold, silver, or anything. Federal Reserve notes. The Federal Reserve, which controls our money supply, is a private banking cartel. They're an independent agency that's outside of our government, has zero congressional oversight. They have never been audited. And until we can get control of our money supply, you know, all those issues you just mentioned, there's really very little hope to help, you know. But also,
I think that's the questions that the average
person
is asking.
We have to get control of our money supply. Our government is not in control of its own money supply.
Sure.
And we're indebted to this private organization. Right now, the monetary system through the Federal Reserve is designed to serve the interest of private bankers and wealthy investors.
So what's the step to getting...
We got to end the Federal Reserve and have the U.S. Treasury take over the responsibilities. And with congressional oversight and with we the people having a higher level of control than even Congress through direct democracy. I can explain that more in a little bit. We need to transform the monetary system to work for we the people, not just private bankers. And if we the people were in control of the monetary system, I know we'd make decisions to help, you know, feed the homeless, to help, you know, implement.
So what does the people mean? What does we the people mean? Like, how would that voting process take place? Like, how would we the people bring laws in? How would we, because, you know, right now, a lot of people think that we the people are, I vote for such and such because he's the only fucking guy running. You know what I'm saying? So you got four guys running. I vote for one of them. I did my job. I voted this guy in. This guy gets in there. He can do what the fuck he wants. And after that, I have no control over what the hell happens as we the people, as me, myself.
Well, it all starts with, again, write in Casey Wells in 2020.
All right.
And I'll show you how it's done. And let me explain to you how it will be done on a local level and a federal level. First, on a local level, your TIF money, your real estate tax money. I think that if the people in their local communities were in control of their own real estate tax money, they would choose to have that money spent to help out small local businesses, to help revitalize Main Street, to help local schools and park districts and things like that. 9 times out of 10, our real estate tax money right now is being used to give like Walmarts or gas stations or these big box chain organizations tax breaks and tax incentives and extra money to come in to attract under this guise of economic development, as if them coming to the community and giving us, you know, minimum wage jobs is going to help boost our own personal, you know, wealth. But it's all a real scam. And so if the people were in charge locally, like if the city governments adapted this thing I'm calling direct democracy, and it was put on the table, like, and we the the people in your community saw what the upcoming city council government agendas were, and you had the opportunity to vote on those agendas. And then the aldermen in your city council could then view the statistics of what the people in their wards wanted. I want to make a system that will obligate them to vote for whatever the stat is. So if 52% are for spending the money this way or that, then they are obligated to vote for what the people in their wards want. And on a similar level, on a federal level, say we put term limits on the table. Right now, congressmen, they're not going to vote for term limits because it's a threat to their livelihood or something.
Well, sure.
They get benefits.
It's been talked about a lot, but nobody's, you know, really, it's like it's a conversation somewhere, but it's never really actually is talked about.
Because there's every... it's never really going to happen because they're never going
to
vote for it.
Of course it's not going to happen. They're not going to vote for it. They got the power to vote.
But I want to give the people the power.
But how do you remove those people and at the top that have been sitting there forever?
Okay. Here's how we're going to do it. I'm going to give... the number one thing I'm fighting for running for president is direct democracy. I believe in the American people. 95% of the people I've been meeting out here this year and last are good, kind-hearted, concerned American citizens that, like me, want to just help our local communities and help make this world a better place. And so if we give we the people the power, I believe we'll make much better decisions than what are being made right now. But say we put term limits on the table. If the majority of the people in your district want term limits, like 56% vote for term limits, then also your elected representative, your congressman, whoever represents your district, will be obligated to vote for term limits if the people in his district or her district want that. And if they don't, they're out of office.
Right. So it would mean that the people get to vote on everything that they want to vote on.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah. And then our elected representatives are supposed to represent those interests.
Represent those people. Yeah.
We're a republic.
It sounds like great.
Look up a definition of a republic. It says supreme power is held by the people.
Right.
It starts off as that.
Right.
You know, and we were supposed to be a self-governing society. The Declaration of Independence states that governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. But I think they've been operating outside of our consent for far too long. And I want to create a system that will allow the American people to provide their consent and input on public policy.
Like, ideally, realistically, and think about all the red tape, all the bullshit that's going on, all the fuckery that happens. Ideally, how long do you think it would take to implement such a thing?
Just for the coding.
With everything that would have to take place, how long would it take?
I think I could get it done within my first year in presidency. If not 6 months, 6 months to a year, it could be done. I'm hoping in the first month, before that happens, I would like to end the Federal Reserve System, and I would like to get our money back to help finance the next step. So once we do have direct democracy, we'll have the money we need to fund whatever projects we're voting on to do.
Don't you think that the super trillionaires would probably kill you?
What?
Don't you think they would Epstein you at some point if you tried to take their money away from them?
I don't know. Maybe we'll Epstein them first.
That would be some crazy shit. You start taking money out of people's pockets, that's when they get pissed off.
You know, they do what they got to do. I got to do what I got to do. But I can't live.
But
any
you got
to
believe. You got to believe in it.
I believe that God has
people have
a
to be
will
free.
For me, and I'm following God's will for me.
Right on.
And no matter what happens, live or die, I'm going to live trying to do everything I just told
you. So what's the next steps and campaigning? Like, how does it work, man? Like, because, you know, the average person, they really know how. I mean, your dude is just this running for it, and it's awesome. Like, you're running for the people. So what's the next step in campaigning? Like, what do you do next?
Well, I believe...
Are you working on funding? Do you have a site or anything that people can donate
to?
Sure,
yeah. You can go to CaseyWellsForPresident.com if anybody out there would like to make a donation.
Okay,
God bless
cool.
you for that. I left home with $500 in a dream.
Right on.
I'll be the poorest and the youngest president ever elected. But I'm going to keep going until I got nothing left. But so far, I've been very blessed. I've been through Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia... And now I'm here in North Carolina.
Okay, and you've been campaigning all these places?
And I had to get signatures in all those places and my slate of electors in each place.
Okay.
And I had to get all my paperwork notarized in some of those places. In the state of North Carolina, I had to get 500 signatures.
Did you get it?
I think we got it today.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is there some place that people can go like to sign or do anything to support you that will help your campaign?
Donating would be helpful.
So it would just be CaseyWellsForPresident.com.
You can go to donate and they'll take you to my GoFundMe.
Casey as in K-A-S-E-Y. Spell it out.
K-A-S-E-Y-W-E-L-L-S-F-O-R.
And I'll put it in the info of the podcast.
And click on the donate if you want to donate.
Okay.
Other than that, you could just tell your friends and family about me. Help me spread word of mouth. I doubt they're going to put me on mainstream media because three of the big six major media corporations are headquartered in the Rockefeller Center. Fox News is headquartered in the Rockefeller Center. MSNBC is headquartered there. The News Corporation owns CNN. They're headquartered in the Rockefeller Center.
So if you want, so how can people listen to you, to your ideas, to your politics, to
you
the
can follow
way
you, me on Facebook.
Okay.
I'm on Instagram.
Okay.
I've slacked off on my tweeting lately, right. But I got a Twitter
and
page.
And they find you how, just the same way, Casey Wells, or how do they find you?
Everything besides Twitter, just search Casey Wells for President, YouTube, Instagram,
okay.
Facebook.
So you have some videos on YouTube and things?
Yeah.
Okay.
But on Twitter, I'm at Wright, W-R-I-T-E, Casey Wells. And Casey Wells is all caps, Wright is lowercase.
Okay. Hell yeah.
That's my handle on Twitter.
Okay.
And so, yep. And just help retweet things that I've done in the past, or, you know, share one of my Facebook posts. Let your friends and family know who I am. They cannot stop word of mouth. They may try to black me out on, not put me on mainstream media. You know, they say the revolution won't be televised.
Yeah, right.
You know, that might be the truth.
Yeah, hey, man, revolution's got to happen, man. At some point, it's got to fucking happen, because it, at this point, we're seeing, there's too much. You're seeing about, you know, what do you think about the Floyd thing, you know, that we've been seeing all over the news with the cop killing the black man with his knee on his neck. What are your thoughts on that shit?
I made a post about that yesterday.
What are your thoughts on it?
That any police officer using lethal force in a non-lethal situation should be subject to the same civil penalties as a civilian, you know. Murder's murder.
Yeah, right.
And so, and if they keep being able to get away with murder, they're going to keep murdering people.
It's like, I don't understand how, if you have your, if you're handcuffed behind your back, how far are you going with like three or four cops around you? If you're handcuffed already laying face down on the ground.
Yeah.
How far are you going?
What do you mean? What do you
mean? Anybody. How far am I going? If I'm face down on the damn ground with my hands behind my back handcuffed, with three or four cops around me, am I really going to be going far for somebody to necessitate somebody to put their knee on my neck? If anything, put your knee in his back. If sit on his back or whatever, you know, like jiu-jitsu. Right. You know, fucking learn some wrestling or something.
Right.
I don't know. It's ridiculous.
It's heartbreaking and disgusting. I know.
And then to see the response of the people, like, you understand the outrage to a degree, and then to another degree, you're like, really, guys? I don't know. I think the United States is at a tipping point.
And I'm hoping to ride the wave and be there when the revolution happens to give it back to the American people, you know, and allow us to have the opportunity to have a voice. You know, a lot of this anger is driven by the feeling of being underrepresented, not listened to, and not having a voice. You know, but I think if the people had a say and the people were more in control of these situations, there wouldn't be so much anger in the world and hate going on.
I hear you. That's the imagined world. That's the world that I think people are starting to want to realize and understand.
I got the 2020 vision. That's what
there
I'm talking
you go,
about.
Man.
Using my creativity to put it to work for the American people.
So, what's the next? You're in North Carolina now. Or are you going to another place next?
Georgia.
Okay.
I got enough money to get to Georgia and Florida.
Okay.
For sure. And then I'm going to have to head over to Texas. If I don't get any more donations between here and Texas, I'm going to be pretty short by then. But I have faith in God and in the American people that I'll be provided what I need whenever I get there. I might not have it right now, but it'll come to me when I need it.
So tell, I want to know about the art. And like I say, everybody else, we've just met, we know nothing, but there's very few things I know. But you have an art piece that my wife was telling me about.
Mm-hmm.
That you, and what is this?
American Standard is the title of it.
Okay.
The secondary title is The Elephant in the Room.
Okay.
It's made from an old Standard Oil farm fuel tank at its base, and I've done extensive research on the history of Standard Oil. Written on one side of it are all the subsidiaries of Standard Oil that I'm aware of, like ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, Shell, Chevron, BP, Texaco, Amoco, Phillips 66, 76, Gulf, you know, and so on, Sinclair. Almost every major oil or gas company is a subsidiary of Standard Oil.
Okay.
And it's all coming from the same refineries, enriching the same families. But on the butt of the elephant, I have like 10 or more Rockefeller family philanthropies that were founded out of that great wealth they acquired through Standard Oil. And then on the other side of the elephant are many of the organizations that those philanthropies donate to, like the Council on Foreign Relations and the World Bank, you know, World Health Organization, and all those other organizations I previously mentioned, the United Nations. John D. Rockefeller Jr. bought the land and paid for the building for the establishment of the United Nations in New York, and Rockefeller Family Philanthropies continue with their conditional grants to dictate the development of the United Nations to this day. It's all a system for them and their control. The Rockefeller influence over politics and economics in this country, not in my lifetime, I haven't ever heard one politician even mention their name, let alone suggest maybe we ought to do something to rein in the power and control they have over this country. So that's why it's the elephant in the room. It's the thing that's there
that nobody's talking about.
Right.
So do you take this everywhere you go when you're campaigning?
Yeah.
And so do you get a lot of conversation? Is it a conversation piece?
Oh,
are you able to talk to a lot of people?
What's
the response for people who are now? I've heard these things, and I'm not well versed, and I would never begin to tell anybody that I know a lot, but I know of. I've heard the stories, I've read a little bit, I've talked to a lot of people, so at least I'm a little versed. But the average fucking person is going to look at you like you're a fucking alien. They like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude?
You might think
the average
from
person,
sitting there, but you're
the
not
average
in my
person
shoes.
Doesn't,
you got to see what I see. I'm not seeing that at all.
No, what I'm saying, the average person that you talk to on the streets, because I deal with people every day, I'm in customer service, I talk to people all the time. And if I began to talk to them about the influence of the Rockefellers and world economics and everything that goes on, all that shit, they would be like, huh? Deer in headlights. You know, that's just the average person out there.
If you had an elephant,
they just don't think about it.
If you had a life-size elephant sculpture with you made of all scrap metal, that conversation would be way different.
So how do people respond is what I'm asking. Like, how do they respond?
In awe and wonder of the elephant to start. So they approach it with their jaw on the floor to start, like,
right.
Just like, what the?
Right, right, right.
What am I looking at? You
right.
Know?
And so when you explain it to them,
they start pointing out all the little pieces on it that they recognize.
Yeah.
And then they start reading it. All this stuff starts to unfold with them. It's disarming. It really disarms people and brings them in. And all I have to really do is sit back and wait for people to come to me with the elephant. I don't have to push myself on anybody. And when they come, the people that approach me are interested in wanting to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So the conversation just opens right up.
Yeah.
And the elephant, I can point all over the elephant.
So like stuff makes, it's like doors opening up and everybody's like, yeah, like it all kind of flows out. Like, yes, it's fucking makes sense.
I can just point here, point there. It's all written on the elephant.
Sure.
My policies are on, I got some things I want to fight against written on one ear, other things I want to fight for on the other ear. You know, all about positive, negative, back and forth.
So how do you get like a, how can you get some major attention? Like, what do you think you can, do you have any plans? How can you get out there to really get your name out there?
Second page of the Greensboro newspaper today. You know, that's one step. I've been in about 15 other newspapers and I've had a hard time accessing mainstream media.
Sure.
But that was expected from the beginning based on what I know.
Yeah, of course.
And so,
do you have a YouTube channel or anything that where you're...
Yeah, it's not much right now, but I mean, I've got enough on there for people to understand who I am and what I'm about.
That might be some stuff you get into, like do a YouTube channel. That's where the shit's
really,
at. Like,
it's really challenging for me right now on the road, though, because my phone can't upload videos very well. And because I'm low on data or something, I'm not sure.
I don't know either, dude.
It's like a 5-year-old.
Now, how old are you?
41. I'd be the youngest president ever elected and the poorest. In that respect, I'm the exact opposite of our current president.
Sure.
He's the oldest and the richest.
Right.
But maybe in a few other ways, too. But
all right.
I'm not here to disparage him in any way. I'm just here to share my vision of the future that I don't hear him saying.
Yeah.
He's not ending the Federal Reserve. He's not talking about empowering the people. He's not talking about bringing home our troops and focusing our military on American problems. And if people like those ideas, I'm here to offer them an alternative to voting for the lesser of two evils.
Okay. What do you think about the healthcare system?
I support universal healthcare. I support universal basic income also.
Do you? Okay.
I support anything that's going to help uplift people out of poverty and help them meet their basic needs and protect and serve the American people. But we have to get control of our money supply before we can do any of those things, because I'm not for raising taxes to fund them.
You know? Do you see any other countries that's doing a good job? Like, what do you think about other affairs?
I'm not going to BS with you and act like I know the perfect model out there.
Yeah.
Some lady I just met at Walmart mentioned maybe we need to have a contest like they used to do in the old days. Who can put forward the best healthcare policy proposal and have everybody
vote on it?
Vote on those and then go with that, you know. Yeah. But I personally think it should be a thing where, you know, it's opt in, opt out. You know, if you want to do universal healthcare, you can opt in. If you like the thing you got, you know, keep that, whatever. But if we work together to come up with it, I think that's something that I'm not going to be able to have the perfect plan for. But I believe if we work together as a group and have everybody use their collective wisdom to formulate the best strategy for that, we could come up with something amazing.
Yeah, healthcare is a big one, I think, for the average, for the people that you talk to, like especially the poor people who can't afford everything. You can't afford healthcare. And a lot of jobs can't afford to give it to you, especially if they're small businesses. I work for a small business. And they can't afford to give healthcare. I mean, it would just take everything out of the profits. And then you think about any kind of hiccup in your health, and you're almost bankrupt.
Yeah.
Anything, you know. So I go get X-rays, or I get any kind of a minor surgery, and you know, it's like a student loan. I'm paying off for 10 years.
It's a predatory system.
It's ridiculous. And I think for me personally, and for somebody who has a family, like that bothers me that I have to worry about if I get sick, my family's not going to be able to eat. Like that shit's fucked up, you know. Yeah. I think there should be a little bit of help somewhere. I mean, there should be something, you know. And I understand not giving everything away. But don't make it so ridiculous to where we can't afford it.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. I mean, I think there's it just, I think it's frightening to people, especially with the dietary system in America and how the cheapest food out there is the worst fucking food out there.
Yeah.
You know?
I heard a while back that there's only 14 substances or chemical whatever that are banned in America, and in Europe there's over 1,400 that are banned from being able to be put in our food and drugs. You know, I don't even know why we have an FDA right now. It doesn't seem like they do anything.
There's a shitload of stuff that goes past that. I worked when I was I was talking to a buddy about this recently. I got into like working out and health and fitness in about 10th grade or somewhere around there. I started playing football, and so I started getting into all the, like, you know, creatines and all the, you know, the shit they sell to health stores to get, you know, bulked up and fucking, you know, get strong and all that shit. I got into all that. I worked at GNC. I sold all that shit. None of that shit's fucking FDA approved. They shove so much shit in there, like, it's just like flip a fucking coin as to what the hell is going to be the side effects of it, because none of it's approved. It all goes past the FDA. There's very little stuff that actually goes through the fucking FDA, you know? So there's chemicals every fucking where. There's just like,
FDA is a joke if they're going to allow petroleum-based food colors to be in our food. Do you know about red 40, yellow 5, and blue 1?
No, that's just not all numbers.
Okay, anytime you look on an ingredients label, you see...
Yeah, all the bullshit, sure.
A color and a number
right,
together.
Right.
That's
like what was the old what was the shit back in the Mountain Dew days? You know, back when they would tell you that your sperm that your sperm wouldn't work. Your sperm count would go down if you drank Mountain Dew because it had like yellow number 5 or fucking blue number whatever fuck in it.
Oh yeah, that's petroleum.
That was like
an
old urban legend.
Any color of the rainbow from petroleum because it's black, and that's what they do in the refining process. They extract whatever color they want. Turn it into powdered form, and then they sprinkle in our foods. It's in Skittles, Spree's, M&M's, Gatorade, Kool-Aid.
I don't drink any of that shit.
Drink the Kool-Aid. Anytime you see a bright, vivid color, 9 times out of 10, that's petroleum. And it causes tumors, cancers, other ill health effects. It stains your intestines. It's not digestible.
Sure.
It's awful. You think we should be eating petroleum, you know, but that industry runs this country.
I think it's fucking obvious how the healthcare system is here.
They put it in pills too.
Yeah, I think
pills are supposed to help you.
People should be able to look around and with common sense see why there's disease, cancer, and you know, the increase of necessities for hospitals. Like, why are we building hospitals faster than we're building anything else in this country?
Rockefeller Philanthropies crushed holistic medicine back in the 60s.
Yeah, you can't.
Pills that
have you heard of the Gerson therapy?
No.
It's not allowed in the U.S., but they have it in, I know, Mexico. And I don't know where the other couple places are they have it. But it's all natural, holistic remedy place where it's all... like they do coffee enemas and shit. It's like when you have... Actually, Patrick Swayze was down there doing this treatment and was actually improving, but his lawyers and doctors convinced him to stop doing that and come back to the U.S. and continue with radiation treatment, and he died. Mm-hmm. But he was actually showing improvement in these methods. It's all organic, fresh squeezed juice, like vitamins flushing your body, taking, like, they do the coffee enemas because you can only excrete toxins like two ways, shitting and fucking sweating. Mm-hmm. And if you have a shitload of toxins like you would with cancer, you would have to excrete a lot more often, so they do coffee enemas. But it's just this all natural holistic method, and they don't allow it in the U.S. Like, it was banned, so they had to go to Mexico, they had to go to other places.
Bring holistic medicine back and support it, you know, as best as we could in this country, because that's ridiculous.
I think the information is way better than it was 10 years ago. I mean, like I said, I've been studying a lot of this health shit for a long time, keeping up with it, on the side, and I've seen that people have really... Like the vegan movements and all this, like there's a lot more knowledge out there about health than there was 10, 15 years ago when I first got into it. So it is improving at least, but there's still a lot of bullshit out there with the bullshit companies, with the sugar companies, the corn companies, major manufacturers, R.J. Reynolds, all the bullshit out there, you know. But I think that we're a lot more, and that's what I like about, the Floyd thing that just happened. It's that you're seeing through people's bullshit now, because 20 years ago, people could lie to you anywhere. If you had put it on TV, you would just believe everything. But now everybody's questioning every fucking thing. And when you put the truth out there in front of people's faces and they react, like, you're starting to see a movement. Like the other, who's the Aubrey guy? The black kid that was running through the neighborhood that got shot by those two men that tried to do a citizen's arrest in Georgia?
Yeah.
You know?
I heard about that.
And nothing was going to be done about it.
Took three weeks or something for them?
Oh, it took longer. Over two months.
Oh, wow.
Because he was, he used to be in law enforcement or something. He knew a lot of DAs, and it took a long time to find a DA that didn't have some sort of relationship to him, yada, yada. And really, they were just going to let the motherfucking thing slide under the rug because old Georgia law talks about...
stand your ground.
And citizen's arrest, shit like that, You know, and so they felt justified to do what they did, you know. It's fucked up.
Yeah.
But through social media and video, like, the people are starting to speak And they're starting to speak out, like, to what you're saying, you know what I'm saying? Like, the people taking charge. Mm-hmm. When you're seeing all people's bullshit put out there, and that's what I love about things like the anonymous groups that go out there, yeah. And they exploit the bullshit, and the people, you know, slowly but surely, it's going to fucking flood as all these old people are dying out, and like all the old ways are dying out, and all the people who see it put in front of their face mm-hmm. are starting to wake up and say, well, no, this is fucked up.
That's right. And I hope they understand that I'm their candidate in 2020.
Casey Wells.
That's right, Casey Wells. Casey with a K. That's K-A-S-E-Y.
So we've talked about a lot of serious shit. Let's talk about some different shit, man. Let's right. this
what's
some silly shit, man? What's shit you like to do for fun? What's enjoyable for you? What's a way that you just lay back and just laugh and enjoy? What's some of the what do you like?
Man,
you enjoy movies. You like enjoy? Are you in, into music? Are you into?
I wish I could. I'm a pretty serious guy.
You're just all serious, man. You're all business.
I'm on a mission right now.
You're just on a mission. You don't do anything to lay back and relax.
I made my elephant, you know. That was, you know, what
I did. You're a very focused person, obviously, yeah. Because of the artwork we've talked about from the beginning has been very intense.
Yeah, it always
was. Intensive labor.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're just like that all the time. You're just intense. You're just go, go, go. I have a focus, and I need to get there.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can respect that. That's how people get shit done.
It took losing my siblings in order to flip that trigger, you know, of realizing how
tragedy.
How precious life is.
Yeah.
And how important my time is. You know, I'm not going to live forever.
Right.
But with the time I have, I want to do something with it that will have an impact on this country and humanity. You know, I want to do things that, you know,
matter.
Yeah.
Leave a mark.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, of course. I understand. Yeah. I understand that drive completely. And I think I think at some point everybody has that place where they're like, fuck, is there going to be a mark for me? Is there going to be a space for me where there's a memory anywhere? And very few people take the leap to make sure that that mark is made, you know.
Gotta listen to that voice in your
back.
You
think about what was that moment in that movie Troy with Brad Pitt, and they did, and it was that famous quote of the boy talking about, you know, him going to the battle and how he'd be afraid to go out there, and then Achilles, the character, said, well, that's why you'll never be remembered, you know, because most people are afraid to do that, to take that step.
It took me 10 years to face my fears and finally move forward.
Sure.
You know,
it have to. I mean. So, and you told me earlier that you have overcome like addiction, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And in that, like we talked about, those demons in itself.
I like to pretend I was never addicted, but I drank regularly for 20 years, and
sure,
I smoked pot pretty regularly. Even, you know, took Adderall for about 20 years. But
right.
When I had my daughter in 2019 January, and I decided to run for president, and also learned what I told you is that 20 beers were tested and 19 of 20 were found to have ready Roundup.
I wanted to get into that as well. I wanted to get into
that. That was the trigger for me of like, I'm done drinking.
Was
no wonder I got such awful hangovers. Like if ready Roundup is in almost every major beer, forget it. I'm done with it. Same thing with when I found out that Red 40, Yellow 5, and Blue 1 are petroleum-based food colorings. Cold turkey, done with that in my diet. Will not touch anything that has that.
That was the we were talking about that. You brought that up earlier, and I wanted to talk about that again because I've been telling people. I'm a musician. I played out for many, 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 many years, you know, and for about 4 years straight, you know, I was in the bars every weekend, you know, in the scene and playing music, and I was known as somebody. I drank Miller Lite. That was my drink. Actually, me and my guitar player both. Like, that was our... We tried to get a fucking sponsorship for Miller Lite because we drank it so much. That's the only thing I drank every day. At least 12-pack a day for years. And at some point, like, I could not drink more than two, and my body would flame up. My fucking esophagus would flame up. I'd get acid reflux. My stomach would be sour. Mm-hmm. I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. And so I had to stop drinking it. Now, like Bud Light, any of the other American beers, I could not drink. That's what the only beer I can drink is Corona. It's the only beer that will not do that to me. And Guinness, I can drink a Guinness. Yeah. But American beers, all of them fuck me up. Like, it's almost, and I've been telling people too, it's almost like, it's almost like I drank it so much that it created some sort of intolerance in me. Like a gluten, or you know, like mm-hmm. people have the gluten issues or whatever. I was like, I feel like I drank so much of it that it created some sort of issue in my body. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense. That's the first time I've heard anything what you've talked about the
glyphosate, ready round
glyphosate in the American beers.
Yeah, it's there, you know, because they're getting it from the oats and barley, or you know, whatever the ingredients that it's all being.
Have they got
done
any
on industrial
legislature
farms?
Coming? Because there's been a lot of lawsuits against that company, and I know they sold
Monsanto
out and went to fucking Russia or Germany or wherever the fuck they went to.
But beer manufacturers don't even have to put their ingredients on there, so right. you know. There should be something. That's another thing I'd like to propose. I don't know if the American people will support the idea, but, you know, I certainly, if my vote was equal in a direct democracy system, I would be voting for banning pesticides and things like that sprayed on our foods. That's crazy.
Sure.
There's
ridiculous.
Organic pesticides
it's
out
ridiculous.
There that aren't chemical-based like that that
right.
cause so much, you know, bad toxins in your body.
And it'd be... And I think that, I've been educated to some degree about the effects and the problems with pesticides and things like that. But there was a point, I remember the point in my life when I wasn't, and I was ignorant to it. And when somebody would say something, I would laugh at them about it, you know, like, what the fuck are you talking about, you know. And I think that the average person is still ignorant to how much damage there is on their foods. And the stuff that they buy, even if they think that they're eating fresh food, you know, how much shit is on the fucking thing. Yeah. Like, if you got a shiny ass
apple.
Red pepper, right. apple, right. tomato,
right.
there's some shit on it yeah. that makes it that damn shiny. Yeah. It's not supposed to look like that. Like, yeah. look at the difference. And here's the difference, too, and my wife has noticed, too, because any chance I get, I'll buy organic if I have the extra money.
Me too.
I can't always afford it.
Yeah.
It's the reality, you know, and that's unfortunate as well. But so I'll buy it as much as I can. And my wife has even noticed. She was like, this onion or potato or whatever, apple, it goes bad within days, as opposed to the other shit, the non-organic shit, will stay in our fucking cabinet or refrigerator for 3, 4, 5 weeks, and it doesn't have a bad spot on it at all.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the difference. Yeah. And that should be a red flag to people.
Sure.
Like, that's not natural. That's not natural. Yeah. Like, have you seen the guys on, I don't know, I knew one person to do this personally, but there's a famous one where they took a McDonald's whatever the fuck quarter pounder or whatever and
put in his coat pocket,
left it out for over a year and just filmed and took pictures and seen how it developed and how it never grew mold or anything and kind of just stayed in its same form after a year of it.
Yeah,
I knew one guy to do that with Chinese food.
Really?
Yeah. He was a real nerdy dude, and which I shouldn't say nerdy dude because you're a very nerdy dude.
I was a jock growing up.
Were you?
Yeah, I was all state basketball.
No shit.
I was a pretty.
Oh, what was your position?
Forward, four position.
Are you still into basketball? Do you watch it? Do you enjoy?
I can do some things.
Do you watch basketball? Are you? You into sports at all?
After I got out of college, I went to college to play basketball too. But after sophomore year, I kind of quit. And then after I lost my siblings, then I started getting serious. Then I started getting serious about art. And then I just stopped paying attention.
Yeah. It'd be fun for some physical fitness though.
Yeah, it's fun.
You gotta have the itch.
I like swimming. Swimming's fun.
Swimming?
Yeah.
Dude, I wanted to get... There's nowhere to really damn swim where I'm at. I've always wanted to get into because the joint issue. Because I got into running a few years... probably about 7 or 8 years ago. It's so funny. I never... running sucks. God dang. Running is horrible, right? I hated running, always, forever and ever. I hated running. And PE and all the shit, I was always just felt like the slow kid and fucking... I hated running. So about 7 or 8 years ago or so, I read this book called Born to Run. And it was about the Tarahumara Indians in like Nevada or something that were just this running tribe. And they ran. They ran like 50 miles at a time. And that's when I learned about ultra running and shit. And I was like, that's crazy, right? So I just started running. And I got into it. And I would run like, I'd go out and just run 6 miles, 7 miles, 8 miles. And I hate running. But it was just, I got, but then all of a sudden my knees started fucking up because I did so much running. So I went from never running ever to I ran a mile. And I was like, oh, fuck it. Then I ran 6 miles. And I was like, oh, yeah, cool. And then I ran 13 miles, you know. And it fucked up my knees. So I wanted to get into swimming. Or like biking, you know, because it's better on your joints, especially swimming, you know. And after sweat, dude, swimming will, your lungs are fucking on fire after swimming, dude.
It's the best exercise you can get.
Oh, dude. Because
you're working all your muscles at once.
You ever did any competition? Oh, dude, so you like swimming?
Yeah.
You ever thought about doing anything like Ironmans or anything like that?
No. No, it's
I feel about, like somebody as focused as you are, it would be perfect for you. Like you could, I feel like you could dial in.
Maybe I could, but my energy, I just like pointing my energy towards things that have more productive outcomes.
So, okay, so this is what I was thinking about earlier. So, you're going for the this year's presidency campaign?
Yes, 2020.
And everything's fucked up now with everything that's went on with the debates.
Bypassing
and
primaries and all that. COVID. Just going straight for general election as a write-in.
So, if you don't win, where do you, are you going to continue to focus for the next one, the 4 years later? Are you going to focus on that? Like, what's your, like, what all is your plans?
My plan is to,
or you're just not even thinking about losing right now. You're just like, I'm winning.
I'm going to continue to make art. I'm going to continue to attempt to expose corruption. And I'm going to continue to follow God's will for me, wherever that leads me.
So you're going
to
continue to tour? I mean, that would be awesome, like to tour around, especially with the art that you, with that elephant. Like, are you going to try?
I have a wife and daughter at home, and
yeah,
I need to get
tough.
Spend some time with them,
right?
In next winter and so on, and so in between the election cycles, I'm gonna, you know, try to be the best dad I can be.
Yeah.
And I'd like to go at it again. I think, but I don't want to say just yet. I got to see what life presents me. And
but for now, you're focused on this campaign, and then you're going to see what energy you have, or what's your next move is after that.
I don't want to think about not losing right now.
Sure, of course you shouldn't.
I'm just thinking about winning, I'll figure it out after election's over.
Hell yeah. That's awesome, man. That's crazy. It's such a different thing to think about running for president and just all of a sudden ask. Write me in. Let's go for it.
Yeah. My first thought when I thought of it was like, oh my God, I could never be president. But then my second, because the speeches and all this, you know, the being.
Have you ever been a speaker? Have you ever done speaking?
Well, teaching, I taught, so, you know, that year I was in front of a class.
In front of classrooms.
Yeah, but.
Has it been a learning experience? Have you, because.
Oh, sure. I pushed myself way out of my comfort zone doing this.
Sure.
I was a hermit for 10 years, man. I gave up my cell phone, my bank account, all credit cards, all, like, emails. I didn't do any social media. For almost 10 years, like none of that.
Right.
None of it. I lived like a monk.
Dude, like, it sounds like, that actually sounds great.
My wife and I had kind of had a long distance relationship for a long time too. And so for years, I was just like super focused on this research I was telling you about.
Yeah.
And I just used my computer to surf the
internet.
How'd
your wife react to all this? I mean, that's got, because I've been married,
she
you know,
heard a
and
lot,
it's tough.
Know, we got married in 2016, and, you know, we met in 2009, so she had about 7 years of hearing me talk about discovering all this information, and it was overwhelming for her, too. She was like, oh, my God, why am I got to be the only person hears about all this all the time?
I tell my wife stuff all the time, and you can just see, like, at one, you can just watch her eyes as they just glaze over, you know. You'll be, because I love listening to podcasts. I listen, obviously, this is a podcast, and I enjoy the format. I love talking to people. I love hearing so many things, you know, ideas and how people think, and I love listening to them, you know. Right. And so I hear information. I'll tell my wife, like, and I'll just rattle off all this shit, and I just hear eyes just glaze over, you know. And I'm like, all right, you hear me? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And my wife's happy that I'm now made the transition from observing all these problems to now attempting to provide solutions to the problems that I've found.
Yeah, dude, that's exactly like, I bet so, because how many people get tired of hearing somebody bitch about something and never do anything?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And she was supportive enough to give me power of attorney to sign her name to all my paperwork because, you know, otherwise I would have to have my vice presidential candidate with me everywhere I go to sign all these papers.
Do you have a vice presidential candidate?
She's my vice president.
She is?
Yeah.
So what is she doing? Is she campaigning?
She's staying home with our daughter right now and taking care of her.
I'm telling you, you need a YouTube channel. You need a group. You need a group YouTube. You and her need a YouTube channel together.
She is supportive, but I don't, she would rather be first lady. I think if I were to actually win the election, she would prefer to resign and allow me, whenever I select the rest of my cabinet, to nominate somebody else.
How would you select your cabinet? Like, how the hell would you even go about that?
I've got a list already prepared of the top 16 positions I'd like to fulfill.
Are these people you know? Are these people... people, like, what are they?
The top 16 are people I see out there that seem to be wanting to also fight for, you know, the working class, for the 99%, for regular folks.
Where do you
folks.
See it? Like, how do you, is it a collective? Is it an online
just
collective?
Just people I've been observing through their similar works.
Are they already in politics?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but then everybody outside of that top 16 are people I've been meeting, you know, people I believe in, people that believe in me, people that are ready to make this kind of similar change. I could tell you one thing that'll be different from my administration than the last four presidential administrations is there will not be a single member of the Council on Foreign Relations in my cabinet, nor anybody that's gone to any of the Bilderberg meetings or attended the Trilateral Commission meetings. None of that Rockefeller-affiliated, associated organizations will be involved in my cabinet. Those organizations are treasonous, and they are working against the best interest of the United States, and I refuse to have any of them a part of my cabinet.
Do you already know for a fact who is and who isn't? And I don't.
Yeah, the lists are out there.
Are they?
I've made documents and documents. Like I told you, my city council, I made two notebooks that are 8 inches thick full of documents.
Oh, that's right, of the people that...
That was just city on a local level. When you want to talk about Rockefeller level, you wouldn't believe how many PDFs and files I have on them. This, I'm talking, I've gone through every single one of their grants.
Have you come across any issues?
Rockefeller Brothers Fund, Rockefeller Foundation, Rockefeller Philanthropy Advisors. And I've looked at so much that I it's a stack from the floor to the ceiling on here, I'm sure.
I believe it from the way you're discussing. Like, have you come across anybody, have you come across any resistance?
In what way?
You're throwing shit out there. You're throwing shit out there against very powerful people. Have you come across any resistance?
No.
Have you come across anybody that's butting heads with you, that's pushing you on any of these issues?
No.
Because it seems, I mean, like that.
Maybe one in 1,000.
Right. So, because you're putting, I mean, when you go against powerful people, you know, I would imagine
right
that
now,
it would
they
be
just
some,
ignore me.
Right. Right. Because they write you off as a,
that's
as a
thing. They ignore you.
Hysteric or something.
Right. Then they laugh at you. Right. And they fight you. Then you win. You know, and so I'm still in the first stage of being ignored by them.
Okay.
And so, but when I talk to the general public about it, it's 99% support in what I'm doing. And they're like, hell yes. God bless you. We need you.
So
I get hugs and tears of joy shed on me daily about my presence and my will to do this and how badly it's needed in this world right now.
So when elections come, what do we need to do? Do we need to write your name in?
Yeah, in the box that says write in.
Right on. So we write Casey Wells.
You got to write it on the ballot. Write
K-A-S-E-Y.
W-E-L-L-S. That's it.
Casey Wells, that's for right. President. Write it in on the ballot. When it comes to election day and you're looking at the bullshit fucking offers they're throwing out to you and telling you have to choose this one or else, you say, fuck all that bullshit. I'm not choosing whatever the hell you're feeding down my goddamn throat. I'm going to take somebody that actually has been with the people and knows the people, and I'm going to write in Casey Wells, K-A-S-E-Y-W-E-L-L-S. That's what we're doing, right?
God bless you for saying that, brother.
Right.
Yes, sir.
So that's what we're doing.
Yes.
Okay. That's exactly, I love it.
I think that's a good place to take a pause on our podcast
right
now.
That's a good time.
Okay.
Good job.
We want to bring it in for a hug?
We can do all that too, man. All right. So CaseyWellsForPresident.com, Casey Wells for President YouTube, Casey Wells for President anywhere you go, Casey Wells when you go to the election ballot and you're writing that, you have that fucking pencil in your hand, you're just like, ugh, ugh, let's vomit on all this bullshit that I see before me. We're going to write in Casey Wells, K-A-S-E-Y-W-E-L-L-S. Thanks, brother.
Amen. Amen.